nodded.
Did it. Turned my single jack for the last time. Drew my pay, $36 for us to sink in, Chuck. Still taking off tonight.
The burrows are loaded, all but the grub. Got any girls who'd be mooning over? Better say goodbye to them and get it out of your system. Maybe you ain't coming back so soon.
No, girls. I only mind the ore that pays.
You don't look like you've been mining anything too rich. If we don't hit it this time, you better marry a rich widow.
He had a realistic, tart sort of humor, which had a sting. Ryan perceived that Mysterious had dug down through his tough hide to the thing that had been disturbing him more and more the last few years. The fact that at 32 he was precisely where he'd been at 20, still knocking around the desert, turning over rocks, hunting the lodestone that kept them coming back all their lives. You did it so long, and then you couldn't quit. You did a hitch in the mines for an outfit, spent 6 months living on beans and saleratus biscuits in a box canyon, sinking test shafts and tunnels, and then stumbled back disillusioned and sick of it. But after a few months, you were ready to go again, your guts knotted up with eagerness, your eyes raving over a story about a strike at Skidoo or Mahogany Flat. This expedition with Mysterious Smith was merely the latest, certainly not the last, of a long series of failures entitled The Life of Grady Ryan.
Look, just how much chance have we really got to sink our picks into something?
Pretty good, pretty good.
It was the least mysterious thing Mysterious Smith had said yet. It was spoken with a glint in eyes bleached like old denim.
Then I don't see why the hell you're letting me in on it, if you think there's something in the bag.
Fellas all got different talents.
The saloon door opened and a gang of borax muckers came in, men Ryan had worked with off and on for a couple of years. Among them were Tom Lund, Ryan's drift boss, and Pat Hoagland. Hoagland was mine superintendent, a sturdy, affable, double-dealing roughneck who knew more about mining than a company president ever would. Hoagland had instituted the practice of charging miners for the candles and carbide they used. A man had better keep his own time card, Ryan knew, or he would come out owing the company. Hoagland came over and laid a hand on his shoulder. He wore a canvas brown mustache and let his long hair curl above his collar.
Good luck, Grady. Maybe it's the right thing you're doing, though I doubt it.
Smith and I are going to find the lost gun site. Next time you see me, I'll be buying cigars instead of candles.
I bet you know where all the gold in Death Valley is, come to that.
All that glitters is not gold.
Hoagland looked pained. He started for the bar, but turned back to Grady.
Kane would like to talk to you before you go. You'll be in his office for an hour tonight if you've got time.
Hell, I haven't even got a dress suit. I can't go up there looking like a mucker.
Kane was a mucker before he was a millionaire.
Grady winked at the prospector.
And he's going to be a mucker again, or I don't know a sick mind when I see it. Suppose you buy the groceries. I'll go up to the boarding house for my stuff. See you at Maggie Conway's for supper.
Tain't safe.
Who's Maggie Conway? Just another cousin Jack's daughter. The girl I'm looking for has her picture on the Double Eagle.
But he thought of Margaret Conway as he walked up the steep, straight road between the lava stone buildings. If she were just another cousin Jack's daughter, it was because he had kept her that way in his mind. She had the warmth and ingenuousness of her ancestors from the old country, with a little bit of their quickness in her speech and a lot of their good humor. Ryan had become so practiced at self-deception that he was not sure whether it was because of her that he hungered so for a real strike or simply for himself. But he did know that it shamed him to be in debt to her for meals, and the few times he had asked leave to call on her, that he could not even afford a turnout to take her riding. And that gnawed at him. It was early January, the air thin and sharp as chilled wine. Night cold was invading the ugly mining town and the parched hills east of Death Valley. Above Furnace Flat's sheet metal hives, the hills loomed stark and colorful, birthmarked with patches of strawberry, stained with greenstone, rotted with slanting ledges of rimrock like outcrops of rusting iron. It was a capricious country, ready to dump gold in your lap or burn you to cracklings beside a spring it had whimsically sucked dry.